SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and we got a lot to do. Tony Black, before we wrap up today, and right now, Steve Haskin, and got to get some of Steve's feedback. We talked, of course, we fit Steve in on Friday last week after the abbreviated scheduling last week, and so we did get Rebel conversation in with Steve. So now a chance to talk a little Florida Derby and I suppose UAE Derby and the aftermath of the Sunland and Louisiana Derbies. Derby dozen, Steve Haskin. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What did you think? Give us your read. Todd Pletcher from the ashes.
Exactly. I wrote in Derby Dozen, this may be his best training job ever. You know, the year started, you know, normally Pletcher is on top of everything in January and February. He's got maidens winning by eight lengths, and he's got allowance winners all over the place, and he's winning the Holy Bull, and he's winning the Fountain of Youth or whatever, and and then comes Derby time. Most of those horses are gone. If they're not, then they're usually gone after the Derby. But basically, a lot of them peak too soon. And for whatever reason, these horses getting late starts. Some of them got hurt as 2-year-olds. But January, February looked like he had absolutely no Derby horses. And you know, Bob Baffert had everything. Baffert had like six legitimate Derby horses, and just about all of them have gotten beat, and Pletcher's horses have come around, and they're just getting better. And right now, they look to be on schedule to peak on Derby Day. And I've got two of them in my top 12, and I'm leaving out a couple. Outshine certainly, you know, belongs in the top 12. You can only put so many horses in there. I put Spinaway in off his maiden win. Spinoff off his maiden win. I was so impressed with everything about that horse. And, you know, even last week when I had to take somebody off, I actually moved him up higher. And then this week I've got him up at number 5. So I think very highly of that horse. And, you know, Cutting Humor, I was on the fence with him. I don't, you know, wasn't quite sure. But right now it's time for production over speculation.
Right.
You know, you can start finding horses and saying, I think this horse is going to do that. You know, if a horse has 0 points, he's got to finish first or second. You start putting him in the top 10, it's pure speculation because you don't know if he's going to get into trouble. He may be the best horse. But you have to take the horses who have earned their way into the Derby already have to take precedence. So I put Cutting Humor in over a horse like Roadster, who I really wanted to put in. But he still has to prove himself, and it's speculation. But Cutting Humor is in there. I mean, do I love him to win the Derby? No. I mean, I put him in at number 12. He's done enough. I throw out his Southwest Stakes, where he got totally wiped out on the first turn. You know, he ran a decent second to Bourbon War in the allowance race. And he found a good spot. You know, it wasn't the hardest spot. Especially the fact that that Mucho Gusto, I mean, showed he really doesn't want to go that far, and I doubt he'll remain on the Derby trail. I'm sure Baffert will shorten him up now. So, you know, other than that, there was really nothing much in the race. So he had a perfect trip, and he got the lead when the speed collapsed off the fast pace. I don't go by fractions or times at Sunland anyway, but still, the speed collapsed. He found himself on the lead, and then another twist of fate came running at him. But to his credit, you know, he was holding him a little bit at the end, and another twist of fate couldn't get by him on the gallop out. So he found a little bit more. So he might have been just goofing off a little bit in the stretch, maybe idling a little bit. But you know, we'll see. He's got to, you know, he's got to go 6 weeks now into the Derby. I just don't. And you know, he's a first samurai, so I don't know if he wants to go a mile and a quarter. I don't know any first samurais that want to go a mile and a quarter. His pedigree is okay, but we'll see. I mean, whether he's going to be on again next week, or especially in 2 weeks, you know, that could be doubtful when you have other horses, and it's going to be a lot of juggling going on after this weekend, and mostly the following weekend. That's going to be the important weekend, and then you still have the Arkansas Derby after that. So there's still a lot to go on. So, I mean, the final Derby dozen, I wouldn't think Cutting Humor will still be on there, but right now he deserves to be on, and we'll see what happens. You know, the Florida Derby looks fairly formful on paper. So, you know, two of the horses are already on there, and we'll see what happens with Hidden Scroll and Harvey Wallbanger and, you know, a couple of the others. There's a couple in there that don't belong. But it's very, very interesting. I tell you, you know, everybody's looking at, you know, what a surprise that By My Standards was, but I'll tell you one thing. That was no fluky race. I mean, that horse ran a very, very good race.
No doubt.
And yeah, he was. You know, his maiden race was very impressive. You know, it was run the same day as the Risen Star, and it was like, you know, a few hundredths of a second off the time of the Risen Star, and it was faster than the Mineshaft for all the horses run that day. So he was right there with the Risen Star horses in his maiden race, and he did it from the outside post. So he looked like, you know, he looked like a good horse coming into the race. And, you know, he got bad at the end. But I give him credit. You know, he was behind horses. There was nowhere to go on the outside. And Saez, you know, he pulled him to the inside. He darted right in, went between horses, and outran a horse that, like I said before, I really, really like a lot. A Spinoff. But what I liked about Spinoff's races is that he had one race in 7 months, and that race was a 11 and a half length laffer. So I don't know if he got much out of that at Tampa. So I think he really needed this race. And, you know, the one thing about it is that, you know, when you go to Fairgrounds, you know, for the first time, you know, it's that long stretch, and he took the lead early. And, you know, like Cutting Humor, it looked like he, you know, might have been idling a little bit in the stretch, and I just think the stretch got a little bit too long for him. And, you know, the other horses, I think the other horse is a very good horse, but I tell you what was very impressive about that horse is that the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh place finishes of that race were all closers, and they all lost five lengths from the eighth pole to the wire. And I find that very impressive. I mean, you know, even the third place finisher, you know, Sueño, he also lost five lengths. He's not he wasn't a closer. He was right on the pace. But other than the runner up,
right,
the third through seventh place finishers lost five lengths.
Yep.
You know, and Spinoff finished five lengths ahead of the third horse. So I found that to be very impressive. You know, I mean, they came home respectable and 12-3. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. You know, the big disappointment in there to me was Country House. I thought at the quarter pole, he made a big sweeping move, which is normally is what you want to do at Fairgrounds, and he just couldn't sustain it. And he wound up losing, again, another horse who lost five lengths in the last eighth of a mile. So give credit, you know, to the first two horses. I think they're both very good horses. My big question with By My Standards is that next eighth of a mile, you know, he's by Golden Sense, so we really don't know much about him. But both his grandsires were sprinters and sprinter miler types. A lot of speed in his pedigree, and you know, Golden Sense was basically a sprinter miler himself. I know he won the San Diego Derby, but of course, they do things early in their career. It's what they do later in their career that defines them. You know, remember Groovy was running in the Kentucky Derby and Orient. You know, a lot of these sort of promises fulfilled. I mean, all these horses, they stretch out okay early in their three-year-old year, but they turn out to be sprinters. And And it's the same way with Golden Sense. He turned out to be an excellent miler, sprinter type. And, you know, whether he can sire a mile and a quarter horse, I don't know. We really have no idea. You know, he stands at Spencer Farm, and Spencer Farm's got Into Mischief, and everybody thought that he wouldn't sire. And so there's always a question about Into Mischiefs. Can they go a mile and a quarter? You know, basically they need a strong female family to go a mile and a quarter. So you might think Golden Sense would be the same thing, and he really doesn't have a strong, by standards, doesn't have a strong female family. But I tell you one thing, he sure looked like he wanted to go a mile and a quarter for that race. I mean, it was very impressive. I was very impressed with the horse. So got to keep him fairly high up, and, you know, with him and the Spinoff. So I think basically between the first two finishes, again, it was like in the Rebel Stakes, the first two finishes of the two divisions, the first two finishes of the two stakes on Saturday, you know, both earned their way, to me, onto the Derby dozen. And we'll see what happens now in the Florida Derby.
Do you want to shift gears from the runners into the weekend and a little UAE Derby in the morning and Florida Derby later?
They're your gears. Any way you want to shift them is fine with me.
All right. Take a look at Dubai. And, of course, we got three American horses. We got some fillies. What's your thought on what we're going to see there?
Well, I tell you, first of all, if you watched his races early in the year, I thought for sure that Walking Thunder was going to be a legitimate Derby horse, and I think he still may. If you're willing to throw out the UAE 2000 Guineas, I don't know what happened to him in that race. I mean, he shouldn't have gotten beat, you know, 5.5 lengths by Estadef, because Estadef was coming off a race where he was beaten by Manguzi, and Manguzi had been absolutely thrashed by Walking Thunder in the UAE 2000 Guineas trial. So I have no idea. Estadef, who was actually a come-from-behind horse, it was a notoriously speed-favoring track, and Estadef took the lead right from the start and never looked back, and Walking Thunder just looked like he didn't want to really come from off the pace. So I would imagine, you know, stretching out in that Oman 316th, and he's got the rail, I can see him right up on the pace. You wouldn't even think that a mile would be his best distance. I mean, he's by Violence, Violence, and he's an absolutely gorgeous horse. I mean, he's a very classy-looking horse with a big, long stride to him. I was very impressed with him. If I was betting this race, I would forgive the 2,000 guineas and look to try and get a price, because if he wins this race, he'll definitely go to the Derby. You know, the Phoenix Ladies is like the Starlight Ladies.
Sure.
You know, it's just a spinoff from the original syndicate. But I can't see them not going to the Derby. I mean, Violence out of a street boss mare, I definitely would see it. You know, and as far as the others, another horse we don't know about, another horse down on the inside is Jabath. Sheikh Mohammed owns, William Haggis trains, and he's been on a synthetic roll over there. He's won all four of his starts on a synthetic surface, and he won that road to the Derby conditions race, and he's been very impressive in all his races, and he's carried weight. I mean, his last three races on a synthetic, he's carried over 130 pounds. How good he is, you know, we really don't know. We have to see how he handles the dirt. But he's another horse that's definitely bred to go on. I mean, he's mostly bred for the grass. Mukadrum is a sire, and he's out of a Pontre Celeb mare. Pontre Celeb, you know, was a runaway winner of the Arc de Triomphe. But, he's a horse that we really don't know about. You know, the horses have been strange in Dubai this year. I mean, the races have been strange. If you look at Divine Image, and, you know, Divine Image had been beaten pretty badly in the UAE 1000 Guineas, and then came back and just squeaked out a victory in the UAE Oaks over Sweet Rose and Rosina, who are in this in the UAE Derby. Then she went into the Albastaquia, you know, with a lot of good horses in there, and she absolutely destroyed them. I mean, she won by over 7 lengths. She beat a horse called called Superior, who had been in that Albastaquia trial with Manguzzi and Estadar and was beaten 20 lengths. And he came back and ran second in the Albastaquia, and Manguzzi didn't seem to stay, and he finished third. So I really don't know what to make of that race. I know Divine Image is going to get bet. They're definitely looking at the Kentucky Oaks with her, and she's a scat daddy. So whether she can beat some of these other horses, the American horses and Walking Thunder and some of these others, it's hard to tell. We really don't know much about the Japanese horse. I mean, he looks like a horse, nothing special, but he's never run a bad race. He's never been out of, he's been out of the money in his first start, but he's been in the money in his last 5 starts. We'll call him at Dermalouf, who was third in the Hyacinth Stakes, which is a Kentucky Derby prep. Now, if you look at the American horses in here, you know, Stubbins, I think, is a much better horse than people think. And when they took the Pasadena off the grass, it might have been the most lucrative race ever taken off the grass, because he wound up winning by 8 lengths. And if he could come back and win a $2.5 million race off of that, and discovered accidentally that he was a dirt horse. But he did throw the 12th post, so he's going to have to break. He's got a lot of early speed. So if he breaks and gets position, you know, he could take him a long way. And as far as Plus K Parfait, you know, he was awfully good last year. I mean, I thought he was going to be a legitimate Derby horse. But, the fact that he ran so well at Keeneland and at Churchill, you might tend to believe that, you know, maybe he just didn't handle fairgrounds. Sometimes it happens, but he ran 2 very uninspiring races. His first wasn't that bad. He ran evenly after a bad start. Then he got absolutely demolished in the Risen Star, so I have no idea what happened to him there. But, you know, listen, he's a point of entry. He's definitely going to be bred for the distance. He's got that little bit of grass breeding in him that you actually like to see. But being by point of entry and out of an awesome again mare, you know he's going to love the distance. So he certainly has a chance to rebound. And I know Peter Miller's, he's always been high on Gray Magician. He's had a strange campaign. You don't see many Santa horses shipping into Laurel with a Miracle Wood, and he got beat by a really good horse who loves that track and always mining, and he just barely got second, but it was a good solid race. I don't know about him. I mean, I don't know how good he is or how far he wants to go. He's by Graydar out of a Johannesburg mare, so there is a question if he wants to go this far. And then of course Aidan O'Brien is here with Van Beethoven, who actually was a really good horse last year when he won the Railway Stakes, Group 2 with Takura. And he ran a decent race in the Champagne Stakes at Doncaster. But, you know, he came back in that Patton Stakes. And I thought that they were going to send the runner-up, Western Australia, here. But they're sending Van Beethoven, who finished 4th in that race. But he only got beat 2 lengths, and he carried 134 pounds. So I certainly wouldn't discount him. So basically, the bottom line is, it's a very wide open race on paper. You got a bunch of fillies in there, you got a whole bunch of American horses, you got a Japanese horse. So we really don't know what's going to happen here. Yeah, you got another horse that's getting good right now, a horse called Golden Jaguar, who won his first 2 starts, looked like he could be any kind, and just got beat last race by Sporting Chance in the 3-horse photo in the Maidan Classic that was going a mile. But it was it was on turf. But his first start when he won, it was on dirt. And he's by Animal Kingdom out of a Crafty Prospect, the mare. So he's again grass and dirt there. So I'm not gonna totally discount a horse like that too. You know, we'll see how the track is playing. But if I had to bet this race right now, I would probably take a chance and throw out the guineas and go with Walking Thunder, only because I was so totally impressed with that horse in his three previous starts.
Well, we'll I would like to see Plus Kip Parfait. I'd like to see him run well and get Brendan Walsh to the Derby. That'd be fun. And I also
like the horse of breeding because Point of Entry is inbred to my favorite, His Majesty, who's really one of my all time favorites. So I mean, I'd love to see him develop. Now the thing is, you have to remember is that winning this race. Everybody's going to look at it. I'm talking about the American horses and say, oh, okay, he won this race, now we're going to Kentucky Derby. Just remember that shipping all the way from the United States to Dubai is not the same as being in Dubai.
Right.
When your horse, look at a horse like Thunder Snow and some of the other horses that have, that have won there, that have come back for the Derby over the years. But to ship all the way there, run there, and then ship all the way back to the United States, you have to remember that when horses do that, like for the Dubai World Cup, they usually come back in like 2 or 3 months,
right?
Not 5 weeks. So we might be asking a lot, for a horse to come back after running a mile and 3/16 over there, to come back and run 5 weeks later in the Kentucky Derby. So don't think that if a horse wins this race from the United States, then he's going to be a live horse for the Derby. It's asking an awful lot of these horses to do that.
Well, considering that Mendelsohn and Thunder Snow were the last two. Now, Lanny came back, and he got better as the Triple Crown season wore on.
Right.
He used his win in the UAE Derby as a warm-up.
Well, at least one of his races got better.
Yes, it did. I mean,
he ran okay in the Derby, ran better in the Preakness, and then ran better in the Belmont.
Now, the best, the saddest part about, I bring this up every single year, because the best winner, I suppose Mendelsohn and Thunder Snow have eclipsed, and even to a lesser extent, Toast of New York and Moop Tahige. Blues and Royals in 2005. That was the first winner, and there had been good winners. There had been Essence of Dubai and Express Tour, and then later, of course, Discreet Cad and Asiatic Boy, Regal Ransom. But Blues and Royals was the first winner of that race that I said, you know what, this horse could compete. And they shipped him to Belmont. He got sick and he died, and it was awful. He died like in July. He got shipping fever and then never was right, and but you want to see, go to, I'll find that link on YouTube. I thought he was really good.
I remember a horse that I actually loved in the Derby coming from Dubai was Street Cry, and he got sick like a week before the Derby and had a scratch.
Well, there's been several horses that you've become enamored with for Derby that just wasn't made to be.
Oh, no, there's plenty of those, that's for sure.
Let's talk about Florida. And, the way things unfolded, at first when I saw that Hidden Scroll had drawn the rail, I thought, this is going to make it even tougher on him. But then I looked a little harder and said, wait a minute. What's to prevent him just from getting out there, establishing position and go forward?
Well, it all depends on how you look at this race. If you look at the race where the Florida Derby is the race you want to win, then he looks terrific, and the one hole looks terrific. If you're looking at him as a Kentucky Derby horse, then I don't like the one hole at all. Because number one, he's at a disadvantage, being it's only his third start. Again, Justify won the Derby in his third start, having never raced at two. I mean, he was the first horse in history to do it. And now you expect another horse to come back the next year to do it. I mean, I don't know. That's asking an awful lot. So if you want to get a horse to do it, you notice what Bill Mott's been doing. He's been working in behind horses. One time he kept them directly behind a workmate, so he got dirt kicked in his face. He really didn't seem to like it for a second until he swung out. And then he worked him behind a horse last time, too. And, he's working him, anywhere from, three, four, five, six lengths behind horses. So Bill Mott is looking at him right now as a Derby horse. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been working them like that if he wants his horse to go. Because he can easily go to the front from the rail, and there's not a lot of speed in here. No. And you know what the speed that is in here is either not very classy or completely unknown. I mean, Maximum Security. I mean, I don't even. He's a total guess. You don't know what he's. You don't know anything about that horse. Absolutely nothing. He's unhandicappable. But if you look at the race, Hit and Scroll, you know, if he goes to the front and wins this race wire to wire, that's great. You got $1 million Grade One win. But it's not going to help him win the Derby. I'll tell you that. You know, because he needs to rate off the pace if he's going to have any kind of shot at the Derby. Because I mean, with three starts, chances of him winning the Derby wire to wire. You know, and listen, Justify was right on the pace last year, but Justify was Justify. I mean, it's Hit and Scroll, another Justify. You know, if he is, then he's got a shot. But I don't like the one hole for him at all. I mean, for the way he's been trained and what the goal is with this horse and what Bill Mott is trying to do with him, the last thing you want to see him is break from the rail and have to go to the lead. Then, fine, you win the Florida Derby, but you're not letting the horse progress as a Derby horse. So it all depends on what they do. If one of those other two horses, if Maximum Security wants to go to the front, that Hart Bell, who, I mean, I don't even know what he's doing in here in the first place, but, you know, he's got some early speed. I mean, if he wants to go to the front, you know, yeah, they're fine. Then you got a legitimate rabbit in the race, and then he can just sit off him. But, you know, he'll have to come off the rail. He'll have to get dirt kicked in his face. He's not going to be able to just sit outside of horses unless somehow he can get out. Now, there's not all the other horses in the race are all closers, so there's not a lot of horses that are going to be able to keep him pinned in. Because they're going to be coming from so far out, so he could legitimately let those other two horses go and then somehow get to the outside. And if he's sitting third in the race, that's exactly what Bill Mott would be looking for. But everybody else, I mean, there aren't many mid-pack type closers in here. I mean, Curran's going to want to come from out of it. Harvey Wolbank is going to want to come from out of it. Bourbon War and Code of Honor. I mean, those, that's the nucleus of your field. So I mean, those are the horses that you have to watch, and they all going to want to depend on a fast pace and come from out of it. You know, and then you know, listen, there's a couple of horses that are getting good that might be long shots to pick up a piece of it, but they both threw way on the outside, which you don't like at Gulfstream, but. It looks like Union's Destiny looked like he was turning into a really nice horse, and then the Fountain of Youth, he just grew post 11 and just had no shot. He got caught very, very wide going into that first turn. And, it ran okay, closed from ninth at the head of the stretch to finish sixth. But, that's not his style of running to be that far back. So he's going to have to break well. But unfortunately, like I said, he grew on the outside again. So, we'll see. As did Garter and Ty, who won that Smooth Air Stakes and was third in the Mucho Macho Man. You know, he gets blinkers off, so I don't know if he's going to get hung wide. But listen, those horses shouldn't beat the top four favorites here. Code of Honor and Bourbon War still look like the strongest horses. The horse that you really don't know much about, really, Harvey Wolbanger. The thing with Harvey Wolbanger is that when he won the Holy Bull, he beat Everfast, who was 1,000,000-1 in that race, and he ran a really good race to run second, and then he comes back and gets absolutely destroyed in the Fountain of Youth. There's no running at all. So I just don't know how good the Holy Bull was. Didn't get great numbers, but on paper, if the pace is legitimate, I mean, there's no reason why Code of Honor and Bourbon War shouldn't really run the same kind of race as they ran last time. And the thing about Maximum Security, you have to remember, is that, again, you know, you talk about a misjudged horse. I mean, you know, they threw him in for a maiden 16,000 his first start. Obviously, they got away with it, you know, after he romped in that race. And then he comes off into two starter allowance races and romps in there. So he's been running against absolutely nothing. But, you know, he's running 109 and 4 and 121 and 3. Now, the strange thing about him is that after his last starter allowance race on February 20th, he went a month without a workout. I don't know what that was all about. And then he finally worked him last weekend, and he worked a half a mile in 52 and 4. At 63 works at the distance. That was the slowest of the 63 works. So I don't know what to make of that at all. I mean, to go a month after a race without a workout, and then work the slowest half mile out of 63 works. So I don't know what to expect from this horse. I really don't. I don't think you can handicap him. I think you should. It's a complete unknown.
Well, and it's not unusual. That's not an unusual work tab for him.
Well, what do you do with the horse for a month if you're not going to work him? I mean,
just galloping.
He's giving him open gallops every single morning.
Exactly, and trying to maintain him and give him 2 minute licks, and his horses don't. The services horses don't work fast.
No, but this is exceptionally slow. But we'll see.
Well, I think it's all it is a published work, so that he's eligible to enter.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you saw the work, but he didn't work to the wire. I mean, I watched him come down the stretch. He was in an open gallop coming down the stretch, and then the work actually was past the wire down the back stretch. That's when he was really rolling. He actually looked pretty good. I don't know where the clockers clocked him. If the clockers clocked him from the half-mile pole to the wire, then that was not a workout. That was an open gallop. He wasn't even on the rail, and he was just going in slow motion. No, when he hit the finish line, he picked it up, and he started picking it up around the turn, and by the time he hit the backstretch, he was motoring pretty good. That, to me, was the workout. You know, that's something like a Doug O'Neill type of workout, you know, just unorthodox. So looking at that 52-4, it makes me think that maybe the clockers might have got him to the wire, in which case he worked a lot faster than that, because that was not his real work. His real work was past the wire.
Interesting. Well, he's a factor of some kind, and then of course Service is going to come back with a pair in the Wood next week, so.
Well, listen. He's got a lot of good horses. He's got a lot of good horses for different races, and he's got Friends You Fire coming back.
Well, and he's got World of Trouble in the Carter.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
That's a very fast horse.
Yes, it is.
You know, third grass doesn't matter. I mean, he's a bullet.
Well, Steve, I appreciate the look back to last week and the Derby Dozen updates and getting ready for Saturday. Tomorrow is always a fun day. We got a long, we start about 9 o'clock with the Dubai action and feeds right in. And actually this year, because Santa Anita's got all these stakes to make up, after Florida starts to wind down, we'll be right in the teeth of the four graded stakes at Santa Anita too. So,
I'll be watching the Florida Derby from the meadow.
From which meadow?
From the old meadow stud.
Oh, that's right.
Chris Chenery's.
That's right. You were going. I forgot about that. I forgot you were going down.
Yeah.
Nice. Well,
I'll be at the tomorrow. I'll be at two of the OTBs in Richmond.
That's right. You have the everybody should go to your bookshelf, pull off all your Haskin books, and bring
them
with you.
I'll sign any. Yeah, bring them over. You know, it's basically a meet and greet. I don't know the difference between meeting and greeting, but I'll do both. I'll meet you and I will greet you.
I love it. Steve, have fun. It should be great. And we'll look forward to the tales of tales from the crypt, as we say.
Yes, I told him that. I said, don't use the word from. The thing is, when I was interviewed for that book at Churchill Downs, the person introducing me said, oh, we're here with Steve Haskins, whose new book is out. It's Tales from the Triple Crown, excuse me. I told him that. I said, people are going to say crypt. If you make it of, people won't say that. But if you say from, people are going to say Tales from the Crypt. And the first person who interviews me started saying Tales from the Crypt.
It always makes me laugh. That's a perennial. I love it. Steve, have a good trip down there, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Steve.
I'll be in Santa Anita when we talk to you Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Have a good trip.
Thank you. Steve Haskin, folks, and Derby Dozen. Let's take our last break real quick, and we'll get Tony Black in here. We'll have 15 minutes with Tony. I want his view. We had Rich Migliore the other day. Spent part of the sale yesterday with Mig. But I want Tony's view of the stick issue back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Where's your head at? We're back at the races. We got 14 minutes to fill out this morning, and we had a little bit of a special programming, as it turned out. I didn't expect that John Secura would spend that time, but I asked him an important question, and you got some important answers. And so we're a little truncated with Tony this morning, and we got an important topic with him, too. Tony, good morning.
Call it the John and Steve Beck Show. But I agree with everything he said. He's really good. He's a diplomat also. He didn't mention a name of a racetrack that has brought such a response and a negative, intensified the negative light on this business.
Well, he was also referring to a prominent industry organ that has painted the industry negatively for years now.
Absolutely. We know that organization. But here's the topic, whips, you know. And I know you don't have a lot of time, and we could both go on for a long time, as John did, in explaining the situation, and we have our viewpoints. But here's the whip rule that I could live with. And I only heard your show a little bit, the tail end of it, yesterday, and haven't been able to listen the last few days.
Did you hear me? Did you hear me, Gliori?
I heard just a piece of it, Steve. And I heard you mention my name. Here's the whip rule I could live with, and I've been riding since 1970, been getting on horses since 67. So I'm old school, and I'm a person that doesn't always handle change well, but handles it. I agree. You can ride a horse and only cock the stick when you want to show them the stick. If you want to tap them on the shoulder, it has to be uncocked. You can tap them on the shoulder. If you want to tap them in behind or behind your boot, under the belly or in behind, it has to be uncocked. I can live with that rule. I'll tell you what you're going to see. You know, habits die hard, but it's going to be an adjustment for riders. But I could adjust to that rule. You know, horses respond to a stick. It's not the sensation of pain or hurting them that they respond to. They respond to the quick movement of your hands in that stick. You know, they respond to it's like a little kid that you might have spanked his butt once and you threaten him. Do you want that again? But they respond to that, you know. Do you want that again? And the waving it at them. I get as much response out of horses waving it at them, tapping them on the shoulder. And then, of course, you cock it and hit them in behind, tap them in behind, or under the belly. But that's not something that you have to do. You can do it, probably get the same response by tapping it a horse in behind. You have to be able to tap them in behind and under the belly with the stick uncocked. Can live with that, Steve. It's not something that is going to be probably totally easy to break riders' routines right off the bat. You know what you're going to see? Because this is what riders ride like. You ride a horse, your stick's down, leaving the gate. When you go further on in the race and you want to either wave it at them or get them interested or touch them, you cock it. You very rarely uncock the stick. You very rarely switch the stick uncocked. And you usually only uncock the stick is if you're winning easy and you're coming to the wire and you put it down and you just, you know, you don't even need to tap or you don't need to do not anything with it. But once jumps usually cock a stick, they don't uncock it. When they switch to their left hand, it's usually cocked. You're not pulling the whole stick through your right hand. It's cocked and you're just grabbing the handle and pulling it through and it's in your left hand. What you might start seeing is riders, because they wave the stick at the horse, now you have to uncock it and tap them on the shoulder. And if you have it uncocked and can tap them in behind, you can uncock it. You're going to see riders dropping their sticks more often, honestly, because, like I said, the usual routine of carrying a stick is once it's cocked, it's cocked. You know, and the only time, like I say, you uncock it is winning easy and coming to the wire, and you really want to show just how easy you're winning. You don't need the stick, and you put it away, and it gives even an impression to the people viewing the race how easy you're winning. Lets the trainer know how easy you're winning. Very rarely did I win on a horse easily and have the stick up in the air. It was put down, uncocked, came to the wire. But as long as you can hit them in behind, tap them in behind with it uncocked, can live with that. If they say you got to keep it uncocked and you can't hit them in behind, they're living in a dream world. you have to be able to tap them in behind, uncock.
And there's nothing in terms of having it in your fist, you know, left or right, and twitching, you know, a couple of twitches. I mean, just in terms of turning your hand, that's not enough.
No. No, they have to. You have to touch them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You have to touch them. Come on, let's be real. You know, you have to touch them. Horses respond to quick movement, of course. Horses respond to sounds at times. You know, I've been on horses walking at a racetrack, and somebody walks over dry leaves, and they crunch, and the horse almost ducks out from underneath you. You know, I've been on the racetrack winning a race, and a piece of paper, a ticket, a mutual ticket, the size of a mutual ticket flies out onto the racetrack, and the horse jumps it like he's jumping a 3-foot fence, you know?
Yep.
No, they respond to quick movements, but they also respond to the motion and the view of the motion. It's the view of the motion. It's not you come down and cut them in half with these sticks. On top of that, these sticks are thick shafts, padded shafts with thick padded poppers. It's not like the old sticks. You know, I can tell you jocks have made sticks out of car antennas. It wasn't even fiberglass. And the poppers were flat leather poppers with a washer in the middle of them. You know, those days are over. You know, I've seen it all. Haven't done it all, but I've seen it all. These sticks are padded, thick shafts with a padded popper in. But the horse does see with peripheral vision that movement of that device. You know, it's not the sensation of pain. It's the movement.
Interesting.
It's the seeing of the movement, not just the feeling of the movement, the seeing of the movement that causes them to respond.
Tony, I asked, that is interesting, and I imagine there's going to be some experimentation, and one of the things that was suggested to us, our friend Leslie Knopf, that is big in the equestrian world, she talked about riding, using your legs more, not riding as short, and then I heard from Woodbury Payne, who talked about the potential for some different bits and headgear that you know, might be able to provide more control and you know, some various things that you know, might be incorporated into this, you know, in coming, if the whip is going the way of the buggy whip, you know, there might be some mechanical things that can be done too to help jocks control horses.
Yeah, you know, the length that riders ride, you know, it got to be, and the South American riders look across the country where they started riding shorter, shorter, and shorter, and the American riders tried to copy them. I was a rider that rode, at times the people would look at me and say, "Man, you really ride long. Your legs ain't that long." Yeah, but I could fold up on a horse. I'd get low. I never moved. I was very firm. I rode long. I rode with my knee just at the pommel of the saddle and at a 90-degree angle. You see these riders, you know, they ride with their legs bent back. You wonder how they can get down low on the horse because their leg actually has to bend back. It's not from the foot to the knee. It isn't straight up and down. And from the knee to the thigh, they're not purchased where it's a 90-degree angle, you know. But there comes a point in riding where the reason you ride to the certain comfortable length of short is leverage. We're not talking about equestrian riding where you're jumping a fence and you have these horses that are not geared up to take off and run. These horses that we're on, sometimes the only way you can control them, and you don't even totally control them, is the leverage that you can get with your legs, your back, your shoulder, and your back and shoulder and legs, where your legs are firm into the, and your foot is firm into the iron, to where you can get the leverage where your foot isn't flopping back and forth when you need to restrain them, if you need to do so, you know, especially in the morning. You know, sometimes I would ride shorter in the morning because now you're galloping horses and you're working them slow. In the afternoon, I'd ride them longer because I could get comfortable. I felt more efficient on their backs. I didn't need tremendous amount of leverage to control the bit and reins, put pressure against the reins and bit in their mouth to control them. But at times, you needed to ride just short enough to be able to gain that leverage that you can gain by using your strength and your legs.
And you know, I wanted to fit this in, and we'll pick this up because obviously there's going to be reaction and fallout from today's meeting. The speculation late yesterday was that the Guild was Terry Meeks was in the process of having everybody agree and so forth. We'll see at the meeting, which starts in about a half an hour. But Tony, Monday I was at Frank and Dino's, Carla Vacareza hosting the sixth annual fundraise for the PDJF, and finally got face to face to meet with Michael McCarthy. And
my man.
I was going to say, and you know, you'll pick this up next week. Without a stick, I'm guessing guys like him and Migliori and Michael's son Trevor, that they're going to have an edge because they can go further up on a horse's neck with their long legs and their long arms.
And there's only so much pushing that you're doing to be effective on helping a horse extend its stride to the utmost. You know, Mike was 5'10". He was emaciated, but he was strong. He was the most responsible, dedicated rider to doing the rate that I to doing the weight that I ever rode with. He was my fierce competitor. We were on different riding styles. He'd come from 9 miles out of it and try to catch me while I was galloping him on the lead. We beat each other an untold number of times. The best thing I used to like to do to Mike was, real quick, when he would get ready to check and was always checking with the light colors and everything, I'd fill his regular colors up with shaving cream in the sleeve, so when he went back to go put his regular colors on, it'd be an armful of shaving cream, and I'd laugh my ass off.
Unbelievable.
He knew it was me, and I can't even tell you the language he used. But we'll take that up at a later date. Thanks for giving me this few minutes to talk about the whip. I don't agree with everything that's happening. I totally agree with John on everything. But that whip, that has to be the way they write it, just the way I explained it to you.
Well done. Tony Black, everybody, the one and only. And we'll wait for some of the news and information out of today's CHRB meeting. Tomorrow, weekend preview. A big one, bigger than usual, bigger than expected, because we've got the California races, stakes that should have already been run. So, lots of Santa Anita, lots of Gulfstream, and World Cup. I want to thank John Secura, who went way above and beyond. And if you missed it, listen tomorrow morning, 6 to 9 to the replay, or on the website, or if you signed up for the podcast, etc. Dick Powell, Steve Ask, and Tony just now. If you're playing today, good luck. Tomorrow, I'm looking forward to that pick six at Aqueduct, actually, and we'll give that. I got that ready to look. Today, pretty quiet, actually. Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Golden Gate, Turfway, Charlestown, Penn, Remington. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.